Hello, my glorious children. My powers have foretold me that viewer discretion is advised due to spicy language and even spicier takes. These views are not representative of fandom.com. Now let's march forth towards your enjoyment of this presentation. Swaggy out. You fucks.
It's Lemurs. Welcome back to Bleach Wiki Podcast. It's been a minute.
It's been 84 years.
I'll explain why in a moment, but first, let's introduce our loveliness to everyone.
I'm Zillanok, and I hate multiple social media platforms, if not all of them.
I'm Future, and I hate everything.
I'm Shiffy, and I'm somehow still here.
Yeah, so Shiff, it's been a minute. Sun couldn't join us today, but we have Shiff, who we've finally been able to reconnect with. The schedules have finally aligned, so it's good to have you back, man.
I've been here the whole time.
In your closet.
I mean, congratulations.
Oh, so that's why it smells like cheese in there.
Yeah, it smells like cheese and other goodiness.
I don't know how you fit in my closet with all the anime fig boxes, but good for you.
So it's been a few months since our last episode. There's several reasons for that. We've just all been busy because we're actual adults that have jobs. And I had COVID, so that was a fun one-month journey. I don't recommend it to anyone's, and that honestly sucked. And I got sick at, like, the end of June, and honestly, last week was, like, the first legit week I did not feel like absolute garbage. So, sorry, guys.
Well, you're forgiven for getting sick with the raging flu. You're welcome. Yeah, no.
Honestly, the comparisons to the flu aren't even like that. I mean, because I've had the flu and like pneumonia twice. It wasn't anywhere close to that. I'm pretty sure I had the variant. And the thing that honestly kicked my ass wasn't so much the actual like virus itself. It was like the after period and the cough. Oh my God, that just ripped out my throat for a couple of weeks. And I just sounded like Kathleen Turner as Jessica Rabbit for weeks on end.
But at least it didn't sound like, you know, Nina Blackwood.
Well, that's true. But anyway, quite a few things have happened since our last episode. We are going to talk about the Soul Society arc, but before we do, we actually got a proper trailer.
There was like a teaser of some kind, a couple seconds of animation, something like that. You know, a minor thing. I don't know if the internet noticed.
No, I just, no trending, just complete radio silence.
I figured we should, you know, bring it to light, really. The Thousand Year Blood War trailer happened! Ah! And it wasn't pre-animated.
No, it was not pre-animated.
Oh, thank God.
But I'm like, I get why they made the pre-animated trailer, because this is kind of like a common misconception with like animation production, that with anime specific, that it's a lot faster than Western animation, which that is kind of true, but anime in a good production environment is still going to take like a year to 18 months on average to make.
So my problem with the first teaser animation, it wasn't like the shots of like Ichigo, Sato, Orihime, or you like walking and firing the weapons and all that looked fine. So did the purple Gessiga at the end that was totally non-canon. It was everything in between where it was like static manga panels colored, and then they just like photoshopped their jaws moving up and down to talk. It didn't look good. And I was like, Thank God we know the anime won't look like that, but this looks a lot better because they fix the colors. They fix the colors of the characters for the most part, and it looks good, and the lighting and the shading is really good, and the atmosphere of the trailer is really good, and yeah, so I am a little more optimistic about the quality of the anime than I was before.
Yeah, I mean, the original teaser to me was more like a proof of concept trailer, more than anything else, where this trailer is clearly finished animation with composited effects and everything, which, by the way, the CG was really well used here, and it was CG, like, there's just certain things, but it was so well done, and things have just kind of come so far in terms of, like, compositing, where...
How far we've come from the Hellverse and the doors. I remember you ranting about back in the
day. Yeah, it's a shame. It's just... Because when you don't light things correctly, like, you notice. Like, I don't mind if things have, like, a little CGI movement. That's, like, not my problem. It's when it doesn't match with the environment and it sticks out like a sore thumb. I'm like, I could understand that in, like, 1992, but I'm like, come on, man.
Lemurs, I direct your attention to every cartoon movie that Nickelodeon has ever made.
Mm-hmm, I don't even...
Look at the first... the original two Rugrats movies, where everything is just slightly shaded more.
I mean, that's just basically the hallmark of a cartoon movie.
Yeah, just shaded a little darker.
But it doesn't, you don't need to. You don't need to do it. You just, it's just like, why would you bother? It doesn't actually make anything better.
Although, in the Rugrats movie's defense, like, especially the second one, it actually does have a lot of nice animation because, you know, we're TV animation, sometimes you do on twos and fours, but usually on animation, you're usually going, like, 12 to 15 frames a second. You're rarely going the full, you know, 24 frames per second like you would see in a Disney movie or something like that.
Still, I'm just not really sure what that ridiculous amount of extra shading is even doing. It's like they just add that in after everything else. It's like, even if the animation quality is a lot better, why add this?
Well, it might also, at least during the 90s Nickelodeon movies, I mean, digital color animation was a thing originally developed by Disney in the early 90s, and not every studio might not have had it. So stuff like the Rugrats movie, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, the first one, if it was done in cells. So that might be part of the reason, so that there's a higher amount of contrast for when you film it. Anything else made recently? I have no idea. But I do like how it looks. I mean, most of the core production staff, Masashi Kudo, is still the character designer. There is a new director. Noriyuki Abe is not directing this adaptation, which honestly... I'm kind of okay with, because from what we've seen of this, they're definitely making this a modern anime. What Noriyuki Abe was good was, like, the total, like, 90s anime, early 2000s anime aesthetic, and that kind of style of anime they don't really do anymore. So while the anime is still clearly Bleach, everything's been giving it fresh Kona paint. Like, it feels fresh. It feels brand new. It doesn't feel as dated.
So, was Noriyuki Abe around for, was he in charge of things like Ghost Stories?
He was. He also directed Yu Yu Hakusho.
It's definitely easier to notice the distinction now, because it's been a literal 10-year gap between episodes, and 10 years to change the style and all that, versus anime that have gone from the early 2000s to now, like One Piece, where it's a gradual change, and it's just like arc by arc, they alter things a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that this new style looks good and it works. I am a little confused why everyone thought, like, it was so radically different that, like, we had to change profile images on the wiki for it, but...
Not yet, at least, you know.
Not yet. Not the angles they have.
No, I mean, like, no, people were saying, oh, should we make new sections on the profile pages for these anime images on top of the manga ones? Because it's so different, and I don't see that. It's not like they're making this anime in the style of fucking Pablo Picasso. It still looks like Bleach to me. It looks like Kubo's artwork with more shading, and, you know, darker tones because constant color.
Right. And also the thing is, Kudo draws so close to Kubo.
Just you know, it's like the difference, I don't know, between chapter 1 Kubo and chapter 686 Kubo.
Well, God, that would be impressive if, as a joke, they just animated this entire arc in chapter 1 style so everyone had a jaw that could cut glass. Ugh.
No. They need to animate it in the pilot chapter style. Just have
everything look like that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. And not just the chapter. It has to be like the shitty scanlation where there's like artifacting on everything, and you can see through the other side of the page. Yeah, and the audio is all scratchy and like blown out.
Just put the Manga Panda logo like hovering over everything.
It's not the anime revival we need, but the one we deserve.
Yeah, it's at like a resolution of 75.
144p quality on YouTube.
But are we all holding hands and singing Kumbaya fucking ya?
Everybody needs to go back to their corners.
Yeah, go to your corner.
Yeah, you know, Swiss. There ain't no shaming King like Kong. What the fuck does that mean? What does it mean?
If the old man was here, he'd pimp slap the shit out of all of you.
Rock my baby on the treetop.
What does anything mean anymore? Future, nothing. Say the line.
I don't wanna.
Do it.
That's not how any of this works.
And I noticed this still, and you'll love this, but between the Japanese and the Viz version, like, the Japanese has the correct romanization of Soifon, but in the Viz version, they changed it to the old spelling. Like, they went out of the way to change the graphic font and everything.
You could tell, there's actually a few differences in the names.
Okay, of course they did. It's the same people who are still pushing Halibel for no fucking reason. God!
At this point, it has to be like a Japanese licensor thing, because it's like the weirdest, like, fucking thing.
Why would they be so fucking stubborn? It's literally spelled out for them! Do they think we can't pronounce Haribel?
No, Zil, the one that bugs me the most, just it's like bugs me in the back of my mind, is the difference between the number of R's and G's in Baragon.
Oh yeah, no, I get what you're saying. It kind of just
like the original data books were 1 R and 2 G's, and then like all the English original sources are 2 R's and 1 G.
Why is this trailer framed like a Godzilla movie?
Oh, because it is. You didn't know that?
It's between like the bombastic music and like the crackly sound effects. It's like an old Godzilla movie.
Well, it's didn't Sagashu do the score for the 2016 blah 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 the 2016 Godzilla movie that was directed by Anno?
I don't know, actually. Let me look.
I think it is, because basically Sagashu is Anno's, like, John Williams.
Yeah, no, you're right. He did.
That's why I was like, yeah, this kind of sounds like Evangelion, because it's the same dude. But I do love how this trailer isn't, like, super dialogue heavy. It's just, this is what it is. And the thing that I kind of like about this adaptation is that this is clearly made for Bleach fans. I mean, I think it'll still be accessible to casual viewers, but The only reason this show exists is because Bleach fans have been literally asking for this for a decade now. And since we're in our current reboot reality, the stars just kind of aligned, and it also happened to be Bleach's 20th anniversary. So if there was a time to bring the show back, that was the time.
Well, hopefully, since this series has been over for about 10 years now, that means we don't got to stop for any filler arcs.
Well, over is not quite the right word. The arc is over. Series not so much, technically.
They're going to find a way to do it. You know they're going to find a way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
They're probably going to throw in a bunch of those one-episode fillers that we've all gotten so used to. Because a filler arc is when you need to, like, you need time to catch up, or need time to let the manga get ahead. Those little one-off filler episodes, like the dude with the, like, the cake baker.
Oh, God, right.
Quincy tournament arc.
Oh, God. Honestly, if that happened, I would actually laugh, because that would be the funniest shit ever.
We need more Karkarizer.
Or hey, here's an idea. Take some of those old shit fics that I wrote about Leo killing holidays. Make those into episodes.
We need more Karkarizer and the weird seductress Arrancar.
Oh God, her. Did they ever give her a name?
Nope, never had a name.
Jesus
her,
Christ.
Her weird boy toy had a name.
Oh, right.
Nope, but we did have a user who tried to give her a name.
And to be clear, guys, every time the female Arrancar is not on screen, the kid should be asking, where's the female Arrancar? That we didn't give a name to.
Just good times. But in terms of filler, like, I would not mind if they did pad some stuff out, like, the Misaki parts of the story, which they kind of hinted that they were going to go in depth with, because I'm not sure if you guys saw this. About a week or two ago, I guess Viz uploaded a couple different interviews that I guess they had originally showed in Anime Expo with the... there was one with Johnny Young Bosch and Masakazu Morita, and then there's another one, a short segment with Kubo, and then there was an interesting, it was about like a 7-minute segment with the two directors of the show, like the episode director, and then I guess the director of photography. I'm probably screwing up his exact title, but they went more into like the technical aspects of like what they were hoping to accomplish.
Sorry, was that a general question?
Oh, no, no, it's just a general statement. But no, there was just like an interview is covering that. And that's kind of why I'm a little bit more excited about it, because they go more into like the nitty gritty details of like, you know, we're doing the best that we can. We will be on time, but we're behind. And they're like laughing. They're like, no, we've been spending a lot of time, but we're going to make sure this is the best show it can be. And it'll be there in October, whatever date that is, still to be determined.
Right. Yeah. We still have no actual day. Just October. Just guess.
Do we actually know what's going on with the possibility of an English dub? And if it would be like... same week, 2 weeks behind, because we're really long past the days of years in between.
I think it's going to be basically the same situation with Yashahime, which was a Viz dub, but it was only like 3 or 4 weeks behind. So I think that's basically what we're going to get, because basically Johnny Young Bosch and Michelle Ruff is, you know, pretty much all been but officially confirmed.
Yeah, like, he've read those lines with the...
Didn't Michelle come out and post herself on Twitter that she was coming back? I mean, I can't imagine anybody.
No, well, I think the Japanese producers probably took her aside saying, hey, this is happening. We're bringing everyone who's still around back. You want to come back? And she was like, the hell yeah.
The question I'm just still wondering is, I'm just not sure about the delay between them yet. I mean, you know, I'm not expecting same week, although it is possible.
Usually when you do that, it's kind of a train wreck. The only way that would remotely be possible is if they're literally dubbing it now, like how they do in Japan, like do like a prelay.
Like, Zil, you would know this better than me. If I remember correctly, Academia, Hero Aka, was doing this. They were doing, like, same week for a while throughout part of a season, and then they would do like a 2-week delay, and then the next season they would do that all over again.
No, I do recall that they did do it initially, but basically the way how Japanese anime works in terms of scripts, like sometimes you don't get the episode to literally hours before air. So basically trying to schedule that out and with any unforeseen production delays, it's almost impossible that unless you're like a movie and you have a set release date, it's pretty much impossible to like dub it before the episode is complete.
One of these days, actually, I don't know if it's been done yet. I feel like maybe one American cartoon has tried it, but I don't know if any Japanese, if any anime has tried it. Just like one episode of live dubbing, just to see how disastrous it would be. No, like as a gimmick.
Oh yeah, it's a gimmick. Yeah, but even so, like live dubbing in Japan is honestly like kind of less and less becoming a thing. They're more closer to American cartoons. Like it still does happen for like if you have a show of like a big ensemble cast and like scheduling individual sessions would be basically next to nothing. But some of the bigger shows with like a more extensive like production schedule, like Attack on Titan and JoJo, a lot of the times the actors will record separately.
Oh no, but I'm talking like SNL style, like 7-second tape delay.
I think they still do that for One Piece.
Like air it while they're voicing it.
Oh.
Like that sort of live dubbing, like air it while they are voicing it. It's usually done as a gimmick. The recent show that Betty White was on like 5-10 years back,
Oh, Hot in Cleveland,
they did one episode of that as and it was played up as, you know, this thing they're only doing once for fun. I'm just saying we should do that but in animation, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if at least one American cartoon has tried it. But I'd like to see an anime try it.
No, that'd be fun.
Anyway, I'm just gonna go back to what I was saying earlier about how they frame it almost like a Godzilla movie. Like I was almost expecting like Ultraman or like a team of like Sentai warriors to come hopping out at any second, the way they framed it.
Yeah, no, it definitely. I mean, it wasn't the type of trailer I was expecting. I was figuring, oh, they're going to play number one again. You know, hey, everyone's back. But no, they went hard. I was like, oh, this ain't your mother's Bleach. No, this is our thing. And you will like said thing. So does anyone else have any thoughts or any hopes for the anime?
I keep hearing rumors. Like, I keep hearing on and off rumors about the possibility of some of the plot holes and some of the gaps being filled in by Kubo himself, and I just do hope that ends up being the case.
Oh, no, it's not a rumor. Kubo basically said, and I'm not quoting this exactly in verbatim, but basically he said originally when he was drawing the Thousand Year Blood War arc, he was drawing it in ways that he was like, well, I don't have to keep up with the anime. I don't have like the same restrictions, which is why that arc is like so dark in comparison to the rest of the series. So that, and basically the confirmation from both him and the directors was pretty much, we're not toning anything down. It's going to be the same thing. And then I think Kubo said he's working very close with this team, and I'm not sure, and don't quote me on this, if he said this exactly, but he said he's far closer working with this team than he did the original anime team.
Right, but the only thing I'm not sure of, like, that's been interpreted in some circles, it seems, to mean that, like, that the stuff he got rushed through by his publishers originally, that there may be more new detail added with his supervision that we didn't get in the manga.
Oh no, that'll definitely happen because they'll want to pad this anime out so they can sell more Blu-rays. So regardless, that's definitely gonna happen in some form. Whether it's the extent that fans think it is, we'll just have to wait and see.
Like, I just want to see like some new stuff that and I'm going to kind of make fun of ourselves here, that our standards of that would meet up to our standards of canon.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's I'd like to see new stuff that he really worked with, get like information that especially on some of the things that really got like they should have been explored further and they really weren't. Cough cough, Yachiru. cough, all things having to do with Zaraki and Yachiru Kusajishi in the final fight with Gerard.
I definitely think, especially like some the big beats like Kenpachi, you know, since Kenpachi's such a fan favorite character, they're definitely going to go more ham with that. But I'd also like them to go more full on ham with the Komamura fight.
Oh, that too. And also, I want like an entire, even if it's filler, I want an entire episode about James.
No, there should be a whole filler episode about Robert's briefcase.
No, we need an entire like full 12 episode filler arc of the romance between Robert's briefcase and Aizen's throne. And it's a three-way romance. It's a love triangle, also including Box horse.
And then out of nowhere CT Smith comes out.
One day I'll expect
to read that. Never mind. Talking about the guy from Zombie Powder who basically became Aizen.
And then the unnamed female Roncar awakens from her 3-year coma and can walk again.
Anyway, in the text chat we have for this voice channel, that's the guy I was talking about.
Oh god, Smith. CT Smith. Right.
The guy from Zombie Powder who's a little Aizen, a little Robert.
Oh yeah. Their love child.
He's like actually kinda freaking cool. I still gotta read the third and fourth volumes.
I know for Kubo, Zombie Powder is, you know, not a great time in his life, but it's honestly, I feel like if it had had the chance to kind of grow, it might have become Bleach, but then we wouldn't have Bleach. So, you know, sometimes, you know, bad things happen, but sometimes better things happen afterwards.
I mean, it's a cute little story. I've read half of it. I gotta read the other half still. Anyway, I just got to read you this great little thing. I think I showed you guys this in our own chat on the server here. But great little thing at the beginning of the second volume, great little excerpt that he wrote. Hi, it's me, Nancy. I live inside the refrigerator at Tite's house. I think the series will be over in Weekly Shonen Jump by the time you read this, but thanks for buying volume 2. You're so wonderful. It makes me want to put tooth marks all over your body. Oh no, I'm running out of space. Okay then, bye. Tite Kubo 2000.
Oh, like, I feel so bad, because he was, like, only, like, 20 or 21. I'm like, I can't even, like, imagine, like, the amount of pressure. Just, my God.
What year was he born? He was born in 77. 77, so he was 23 when Zombie Powder, when, at least when the volumes were published.
Yeah, I mean, he was still, like, you know, baby.
Now, the English... The English didn't get published until it was 6. I bought the 4 volumes on eBay recently.
Yeah, I don't think it would have ever gotten published in English if Bleach literally hadn't blown up.
Oh god, no. It definitely wouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean the English volumes flat out say from the creator, the first manga from the creator of Bleach. So if Bleach didn't blow up like it did, then we probably never would have seen Zombie Powder, like, ever.
Oh, and the English volume covers, again, because these were published in, the translations were published in 06, the English volume covers have that same stylized of the volume number that the English Bleach volumes do with that in that crescent moon thing on the bottom corner.
Oh, yeah, well, I think that was, like, it might still be a Viz thing, like, because I'm pretty sure they did that with, like, Naruto, too, or to, like, some variation. It's been so long.
It's, like, each series seems to have its own slightly different stylized way of doing the volume numbers, but the Zombie Powder ones in English are identical to Bleach.
The only thing I like collecting the English volumes because I think the paper is, like, a little bit nicer, but the only thing that kind of, like, super bums me out is that you don't get the slip covers that you do, like, with the Takabon volumes in Japan. And often in Japan, there'll be, like, another hidden, like, line art illustration under the finished one. And I just think those are super cool. And it's kind of a shame that we don't have anything like that here.
Yeah, I get that.
Which, speaking of the year Bleach blew up, this is a perfect segue. So let's just turn back the clock to Japan, 2005, 2006, and a little arc is airing on television that would literally blow up and probably change the trajectory of not just the series, but really how anime was distributed in North America, being one of the first series to be simulcast day and date in Japan. And just, you know, being basically inescapable as Linkin Park AMVs in mid-2000s. So, Zil, do you want to introduce us to this glorious arc?
Yeah, so, you may have heard of the Soul Society arc, you know, the second part of the series. People may have glossed over it a bit back in the day. It is widely considered the best part of Bleach by people who don't think the series ended after the first arc, of which there's apparently a large contingent. It's about Ichigo and the boys and Orihime and Yoruichi going to Soul Society to save Rukia from execution by training and shouting and blowing things up a lot. And honestly, it is good. It is good. It deserves the acclaim it gets, because it is. I'll save my thoughts on it for like the roundtable discussion, but that's the Soul Society arc. It's the second arc. It is to a lot of people the last point in the series where Bleach was like good before it started getting into muddy water territory, so to speak.
Which I do think to an extent that's kind of true, but I think the quality dive that people claim is far over exaggerated. Just to kind of skip ahead, I think the worst thing the Arrancar arc did is that I feel like towards like the second half of the arc, it's more about, you know, fight, almost kind of like a fight tournament arc, and you kind of lose focus, and we're like so focused on the Arrancar, and then it just drags, which some of it might have been Kubo, some of it might have been publishers, but yeah. it definitely didn't have like the same, okay, we go from point A to point A to point C, arc done.
If no one else wants to do their thing first, that's a good segue for me to give my stance on it. That I was talking about earlier, the hot take that I have, so to speak.
Give us your spiciest take.
So, like I said, this is considered the best arc in the manga in the series. And a holy grail of the manga. It has, you know, it's all good, no bad, because to a lot of people, the problems of the series that everyone was complaining about and knows the series for started with the Arrancar arc, which began right afterward. And I do agree that it's good, but I do not think it is like a holy grail or that it lacks the problems of the later arcs. Because after rereading it and rewatching it multiple times, I know it pretty well. And, I actually wrote up a list for a review on a different site of the problems that it has that, and tell me if any of these sound familiar to you. Let's see. So, lack of character focus and persistent off-screening. There are 8 fights around the time of the execution of the end of this arc. 4 of them are off-screen. Does that sound familiar at all?
I don't know. It sounds vaguely familiar.
Disturbingly familiar, even.
Yeah, but I you know what? I can't why is anyone talking about not seeing fucking Shuhei versus Yumichika or Yamamoto versus Ugutake and Shunsu? Why is no one talking about seeing more about that? I wonder why.
Yeah, especially with the Yamamoto Ukitake and Kiraku. Blech. Still have COVID brain.
Yamatoto.
Yamatoto. Like, that's, you know, the more I think about it, I'm like, wow, I can't believe that they cut that out, because that should have been, like, a god-tier fight. And not to, like, dismiss anything else, but some of, like, the other fights are kind of, like, in comparison to what that would have been.
Yeah, like, I mean, we never, you know, really got to see what Yamamoto's powers really were until, like, late into the Ironcar arc after that.
I want to emphasize, this is the one time in canon so far that Iba has had a fight. Period.
Oh, poor Iba.
And the only time we saw him was when Ikkaku and him are just shooting the shit and getting ready to start their next spar.
We don't even see him, like...
They were just grinning at each other, basically.
It was an attack at all.
Nothing after that.
Yes.
So, and then on top of that, we get, characters winning fights by, you know, strengthening their resolve or whatever, right? Everyone fucking hates that. I get why. Guess where it started? Ichigo versus Renji. Renji was gonna kill him, and he's like, I've resolved to kill you, Renji, and then he just fucking won. It happened right there.
Yeah, right. And screaming at the top of his lungs.
It was like the fourth most popular fight in the series, so like, you can't just gloss over that. There's the idea of characters getting like new powers and forms just in time to take on like the next guy or to save themselves. Guess what Bankai was? Bankai was Yoruichi going like, oh, Ichigo, you didn't know your sword is a second form? Well, good for you. I have this doll that can get you in 3 days. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. It won't take 10 years like everyone else. I just have this doll that I've been carrying around in hammer space just for you.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of segue a sec because to skip to future arcs. That's the one thing I feel like the Fullbring arc did a little bit better. Like, Ichigo didn't just, you know, be like, oh, look, you've regained your powers, woo! Like, he had to, like, earn them, like, he had to train. Like, he didn't just happen in, like, a day and a half. And then when he finally got him back, it was all taken away from him. So then when he loses it, like, you really feel for him, like, oh my god, that's horrible. Like, this is your lowest moment as a character. When he's like, okay, here's your magic stick, insert magic stick. Oh, cool, you have superpowers now. You're the Flash. You know, reverse Flash Byakuya and dropkick him. Like, I don't know.
The Fullbring arc did it right, but we can't have nice things. So that's why it had to be retconned. Anyway, so. This is my other favorite thing. I have 5 points here, but this is four, but it's my other favorite thing. The idea of the series having too many characters to focus on, right? This arc tripled the cast of the series on its own. And as I read it, like, even though as I reread it and rewatched it, even though, like, I knew all these characters, I liked them all. I know, like, what they will do in the future to make them more relatable, more popular, and all that. When you read this arc and put yourself in the mindset of, like, reading it for the first time back in fucking 2004, 2005, whatever, it becomes very apparent that, like, a lot of the development of the characters early on is kind of very, like, ham-fisted in to make them, like, relatable and to make their interactions meaningful. I think the best example of this is, again, Yamamoto versus Shunsui Nukitake. Like, in one chapter, we get, like, Yamamoto just, like, expositions about their relationship and, like, how, oh, these are my two favorite students. They mean so much to me. But we're gonna fight to death now, because you crossed the line, sir. And like, it's like, okay, I get why he's doing it, but this seems like it should be taking place at the very end of the manga. Like, it's a huge confrontation that they're implying, but it takes place after we've known them for a grand total of like 10 chapters.
Right. I mean, at this point, Kiraku, like, the only like big appearance he had before this is he was fighting Chad. Fucking Chad.
And that wasn't even really a fight. It was just Chad, like, sort of punches him, and then he was like, oh, this is getting complicated, huh? And then he just swats him aside like nothing.
Oh, poor Chad. Forever the series punching bag, which makes his conclusion just delicious. He's like, now you punching bag.
Yes, but I just, like, you know, and I don't hate it. I don't think it's, like, it's so poorly done as to make it unreadable or unwatchable, because it's still entertaining. But it definitely isn't as well laid out or well paced as the development of Ichigo and his human character surrounding cast from the first arc. Because you had 70 chapters there to build things up, and all the characters are more grounded in reality because they live in the real world. They're not living in a feudal Japan society with different codes of honor and all that shit. And, like, as the series goes forward, and you get these Shinigami across more chapters and arcs and all that to develop them, it makes, like, I would say, honestly, like, the flights in Fake Harakura Town are better done and more meaningful for their characters than the one in Soul Society. Just, like, because, like, I would say, like, of the development they get in Soul Society, I would say Soifon gets the best.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And it's not even, like, perfect, but at least it feels natural because it happens over multiple chapters with her fighting against Ryuichi. But even then, you don't know, like, her for that long beforehand, so it's kind of all of a sudden, like, I'm sad, and why did you betray me? And it's like, well, who are you? Who are you, really? Why should this plot to us?
Yeah, a lot of the Soul Society arc very much screens, okay, this is baby's first really big multiple chapter story arc.
Yeah.
And really, the only Shinigami, Soul Reapers, whatever you want to call them, that really matter in terms of the context of the story is, of course, Ichigo, Renji, Rukia, Byakuya, and Hitsugaya, and Rangiku, and probably Gin and Momo. Like, everything else, yes. Like, it's okay. But really, honestly, Hitsugaya can honestly be considered the second protagonist of the arc.
I would argue also Kenpachi, and at least in terms of Uryu's arc, Mayuri. But other than that, yeah.
To tie back in with the mentioning of the fights being off screen, this is definitely the arc that is considered to have the best pacing, and I do agree with that. Having gone through it a few times, like, I think it is a great method of, like, setting up questions at the beginning and then resolving those naturally as it goes forward. Like, you know, who killed Kaien? Like, who is behind this conspiracy? And, like, and you know, what exactly is Urahara's involvement in the grander scheme of things? Like, I think it's really, really good at doing that naturally. But I think, you know, if we had seen all those fights properly around the last half, like, the pacing would have slowed down tremendously, like it did in Fake Harakura Town. So, for most of those characters, we do see them later on, and we see the fight later, which is fine, but I do think that a lot of readers don't realize that, like, with a cast this big, you cannot have really everyone getting their turn to fight and proper pacing. Because you have to have one or the other. And if you want to see just fights like Dragon Ball Z forever, then sure, you'll like Fake Harakura Town. If you want a proper pacing of the plot, Soul Society arc is where it is at its best. But that was before Kubo was told, like, hey, can you just give every new character you introduce, like, a 5-chapter fight? Thanks. Really, we really appreciate it. And, like, I do think that Bleach has always been unfairly shat on for that, because, like, it's not even unique to the series as far as that balance goes. Like, One Piece, in some of the more, like, war-esque arcs that it's had, has had to do that a lot. Like, have confrontation between two characters that show up for, like, a few panels. It seems really interesting. And they cut back to them later, and they're on, like, other sides of the battlefield. They're not even talking to them anymore. Because the pacing is that fast. But no one there is like, oh man, you know, One Piece really fell off when they didn't show us the Diamond Josu versus Doflamingo. Like, fucking, who cares? It's not that important. You'll see them later.
I mean, I'm not going to act like, you know, Bleach is the greatest story conceived by mankind, but I feel like a lot of, you know, things that people complain about it are ultimately just, you know, they're shown in tropes. It's whatever. It got unneedlessly shat on for no reason other than existing. And some like feudal fandom war between like Bleach and Naruto, which even to this day, I still don't get, because those series are about like as night and day as you can get.
I've always felt like for whatever reason, people got mad about Bleach or wouldn't shit on it more because it's as much of an escapist thing. It takes place in the real world with a cast of human characters versus the more fantasy settings of Naruto and One Piece. But I can't really prove that. But my last point about this arc and its imperfections, handle backgrounds. Everyone's favorite topic. Because people will shit all over the Aranka arc for, especially the latter half, for having white backgrounds, featureless backgrounds, just characters. Do you want to know how many chapters, or even how many panels, like, of this arc had just characters and no backgrounds? Like half of them! It's all manga, but it's only a problem in the later arcs to people. I don't know why. Because it's not like, you know, the fucking, it's not like the drawing of the characters got worse. They got better after this. Kubo's art style improved after the Soul Society arc. But I just, fucking, the lack of consistency drives me nuts. And yes, that those 5 points, basically, like, as the Soul Society arc in a larger point of view, is where Bleach definitively turned from a monster of the week, quirky action comedy thing to battle shonen, where it is about where all development and progression and power ups and stuff revolve around training and fighting and getting your ass kicked and losing. It is all about fighting from this point on. And with it becomes all of those issues I mentioned. The lack of character focus, lack of battle focus, the sudden power-up shit, the basically Japanese spirit winning the day in a lot of fights. Whereas it didn't really matter at all in the first arc, that's where it all comes into play, because that's where the genre of the story shifted. It didn't turn, it didn't make like a hard shift from like comedy to horror or something like that, but it is a turn to a more conventional storyline. And because of that, all of those tropes came into play. So you can love Soul Society arc. It is a good arc. I like it a lot too. But it is also the source of a lot of the problems that people complain about in Bleach. And if you ask me, if you want to complain about those, and you have every right to, they're not, you know, necessarily objectively perfect things to use, especially in excess. If you want to complain about those, and there's in the series, I would ask you acknowledge that they started here. Either that, or just accept that it's a fucking manga for kids and just ride with it. Don't worry that it, like, it happens all the time. It's not that big a deal. One of the two. That's all I ask.
I know, people just get way too hung at what ultimately is like a comics for children, like, which there's nothing wrong with it. You can be an adult and enjoy them. That doesn't really shed anything on you. But at the same time, it's like, dude, like, are you fucking for real? Just, I'm like, why are you taking this so goddamn seriously? But to kind of get back a little bit, I feel like the turning point in the story is Aizen's quote-unquote death. Like, because that's kind of like when the series took a turn. It's like, oh, this shit's actually happening. Because Aizen's apparent demise, I mean, at this point beforehand, we didn't really get that, like, super, like, graphic deaths. Usually, like, any of the deaths were, like, ghosts or, like, hollows. You know, this was like, oh, like, because if you look at his death, it's, like, half the panels in both, like, you know, in the anime and like the manga are like just blood dripping down anywhere and like the sky like just impaled. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, it's a turning point for the story and the characters. Because all of a sudden there's a murder mystery to solve.
Yeah, because we go from like, oh, it's just we're saving Rukia, and then like the bigger subplot of the story. And honestly, this is like my favorite version of like Hisagaya, because like after this arc, he becomes, and I'm sorry to insult the millions of Hisagaya fans, a way less interesting character. Well, anyway, he's like, you know, at this point, I mean, we kind of have more clarification from like later arcs, but he's definitely like the new guy. Like, he's only been a captain 10, 15 years tops. So, you know, he's small, he's a child, you know, but he's the only one to really kind of stare down and be like, wait, why are we doing this? This is kind of stupid. Like, this doesn't seem right. And like, as the kids say, this is sus. And I'm so sorry I said that. I'm going to go to hell for that. But that's the whole thing. And then we have the tie-in with like Momo. And like, I feel like a lot of the emotional core of the arc is that. And, you know, and then, you know, his connection to Momo leads to the Aizen reveal and the realization that, oh shit, like, this is like a full-blown conspiracy that's happening before our eyes. And that's kind of the point where I feel like Bleach as a series just blew up in popularity. Like, I think it was popular, but after that it was like, okay.
That was definitely the blow-up point. You know, it was the peak of Bleach's popularity because that was the arc where they let Kuwa do a full color chapter, which has happened like twice that I know of in the last 20 years of publication.
All right, ship feature. What are your thoughts on this arc?
Well, to go off of what you guys were saying, that this was one arc that a lot of stuff about the series really started to turn. And
oh,
I think
absolutely.
One of the things that kind of came out of it was the unfortunate development of Ichigo's friends in the human world kind of taking a back seat. And I know we've said in the past that, you know, mm-hmm. it's about, you know, like half of his human friends just got shafted and like never got any like real development or anything. But it's also of like the core, like three from the human world being, you know, Orihime, Chad, and Uryu. And in this arc, I mean, aside from Uryu, they didn't really do that much. I mean, I can't even remember anything that Orihime did in this arc. The most that Chad did was get swatted aside by Shunsui. But like at the very least, like Uryu, like, got a chance to like have some development and like fight the guy who murdered his grandfather. And like another thing was that this is like the only time when Mayuri ever actually got any sort of threat or pressure from like anybody until like the last arc. So it kind of just kept up the, just kind of started the trend for the rest of the series where it was like, Ichigo's friends are there, but they're not really doing all that much.
Mm-hmm. No, like, I totally agree with you.
And like, between the three of them, the only one who ever really got to do all that much more is Uryu. And that just kind of kept up in every arc afterwards, where it's like Orihime and Chad kind of get sort of a backseat while Uryu gets more of the attention alongside Ichigo. So this arc I felt was really like the beginning of that, where the focus just kind of shifted away from the human characters and more towards like the Shinigami and like everything going on with them.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Because this was the arc that Kubo had to rush into because they wanted to sell merch. And that never really stopped. Directive.
It's a wonder like what Bleach might have looked like if Kubo actually got like the proper time to develop everything the way that he wanted to. Like if we could have gotten like Ichigo's other friends in the human world like getting powers and like that kind of attention and development before like the other Shinigami started showing up, but nope.
Well, all his other human friends, the just the people from the high school, they only got like any actual exposure. They didn't get anything until Aizen, you know, came to Karakura.
Yeah, it was like Aizen went to Karakura, and then they had like some brief appearances in the last two arc, but other than that, it was like nothing. They just kind of got like shafted to the background.
Unless you count like Karakurizer.
I mean, Karakurizer, I guess, is technically canon because it originally started as like a side gag in the manga volumes.
As far as I'm aware, the volume sketches are canon to the series. I think it was the anime that established that the Karakurizer stuff happened just before the fake Karakura Town stuff kicked off, because it was part of Urahara's plan to like clear the area of Hollow so he could put everyone to sleep and all that, if I recall correctly. But yes, otherwise, the sketches are meant to be canon, as far as I can recall. And we know that because that's the only way that we can explain Khan showing up in fucking Soul Society and doesn't hear Blood War all of a sudden and ranting at Ichigo about why he didn't come save him from Mayuri.
Also, Swole Cone is still one of the most freaking cursed things that has ever existed.
You mean King of New York?
I can't wait for the anime only to see that for the first time. They're gonna put JoJo music over his ass, I swear to God.
All those menacing kanji over his pits.
And better put a re in for good measure.
To be continued.
Yeah, with roundabout playing.
Shibu, do you have thoughts?
King of New York.
No, it's King of New York.
About the Soul Society arc? Not particularly. Honestly, I haven't watched it, reread it, or rewatched it as recently.
Well, how do you think it ranks in terms of arcs for you personally? And this isn't like a definitive, like, this is the canon correctness of the best arcs.
Let's see. That's a tough one. I don't know. Let's see. I'd probably... Recounting a wrong car on fake Karakura as two arcs?
I mean, you can.
I don't know. I'd probably put it like around even with a wrong car arc. I'd put it above Fullbring. I'd still put it below Blood War.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I still love the Soul Society arc to death, but as Dale pointed out, you know, I think a lot of, you know, kind of apps, let's just call it standing because that's what it is. The standing of this arc is definitely because of rose-tinted nostalgia glasses. Because a lot of the problems that are there just get more exasperated in the Arrancar arc. And the reason why I think that is because the pacing of the Soul Society arc is so quick that it kind of masks a lot of those things. But then when you kind of essentially get in a loop, which is essentially kind of what happens with the Arrancar arc, because like a lot of it is like, oh, you know, Ukiyora is, you know, the Byakuya of this arc. And then like a lot of the problems that were there before are like right out there in the open.
Why isn't there this much standing over the agent of the Shinigami arc?
Because people have no taste. And that makes me sad.
I do want to, for a second, talk about the anime adaptation of this arc. Just because I have some... I am not as intense about it as I am about the first arc, because that was a travesty. This arc is where the anime got better from what it was, in terms of the art style, in terms of the pacing, and the adaptation faithfulness. There was a lot less cut out and changed, aside from, you know, boob and blood censorship. That's always going to happen. Although, to be honest, it's not until the Iraq arc we actually get episodes that have nothing cut out or nothing changed, which is, yeah. But this arc... it's the first to add in stuff to help explain plot threads. Like, for example, toward the end of the arc, when Hitsugaya is investigating the Central 46 compound, they actually show him going through, him and Rangiku going through like the security measures that are set up, and realizing, hey, these are activated. These shouldn't be activated at this time. Like, it has to be turned off the inside, but like the Central 46 shouldn't have them on. What's going on here? Or they make a change so that Unohana does a lot of the healing for Renji after Ryakuya fucking shreds him to help justify that, like, he could actually be back on his feet that fast because he was, like, almost dead. And then they have her, you know, showing up late to the execution because of that. So it's the first time you see the anime storyline and making changes to make the story flow better, which I get, and I appreciate that. But there are, from what I recall, at least two changes or adaptation choices that I can't forgive. The first of that is, let's see, first is Orihime after the battle against Jirobo, where Uryu, like, you know, fucking takes him out, and she's reflecting on her comparative lack of development as far as being a fighter goes. In the manga, it just kind of ends with her, like, on an inconclusive note, where she's like, you know, have I really developed that much? Can I really stand with my friends here in this fight? And that leads into her development in the Anka arc, where she's, like, so uncertain about her own powers and, like, whether or not she can really fight in this war because of, like, her broken hairpiece and all that. And so it's natural there. In the anime, do you want to guess what they did?
Oh, do tell.
To our girl. All of a sudden, she sees a light beaming from the heavens and hears Tatsuki going, "You can do it, Orihime!" She's like, "Okay!"
Oh, God, I totally forgot about then, that. Jesus Christ.
And then she just leaves there with you, and it's like, what the fuck? Why would you do that? Why? What is the point of that? Like, the fucking... You fucking heinous criminals. You cut short your most important scene together in the previous arc that just so their friendship is, like, almost meaningless in this anime, and then all of a sudden you want to pull that on us? They're like, no, they're true pals. She can hear her from the heavens in a different dimension when she's feeling sad. Fuck you. Ever. It's insulting what they do with her character.
And it never gets brought up again.
Yeah, I don't remember them talking, if that's what you mean, but...
Yeah, come to think of it, I don't think the Shunshun Rika ever show up in the anime again after this, except for, like, maybe the Bion arc, but that's not canon, so that doesn't really matter.
Okay, aside from Tsubaki being, like, healed and stuff by Hachigen, other than that, no, they do not show up. But the other thing... And this is like, this is a matter of things being cut where they shouldn't have been. So, this is the same episode where Renji is sealed by Unohana, right? And this cut was made so that the runtime of the episode could stay around 22 minutes, without accounting for the opening and ending, right? This episode contained Tosin's backstory. His flashback backstory when he's fighting Kenpachi, and you learn about his friend, and like how she was killed by her husband, and how this inspired him to become a Shinigami to, like, in the name of justice and all that, right? This flashback is like six pages in the manga. And it's I would say that if it were done correctly, it'd be like about 3 minutes of content, because it's very dialogue heavy. The anime, it is 5 still images and 15 seconds, because instead of the very, honestly very beautiful and detailed narration we get from Tosin about, like, his metaphor of the sky being covered by clouds, because even though he's blind, he prefers to being covered by clouds because it's just a blank slate that way, I think. Is that what I recall? His friend preferred it being, like, you know, a clear sky because he could see the stars at night. And when she dies, he's like, you know what? I'm going to come into Shinigami to clear all the clouds away from the sky in her name. I'm not recapping it fully, but it is a very detailed narration that really gives a poetic side to his character. In the anime, it's, I had a friend. She died. So I became a Shinigami. That's it. 15 seconds. And it is insulting.
Honestly, yeah, just not to cut. I know, it is insulting. And if I'm going to be perfectly frank, if any character in the anime adaptation got shit on more than Orihime, it is fucking Tosin. Because by removing that scene, you take out the core of his character, not just for him, but also with Komamura, because...
Yes, because with that backstory, you truly sympathize with him. In the anime, it's just like, oh, okay.
It completely takes away the impact of, like, Tosin's betrayal to Komamura. He's like, dude, bro, what the hell? I'm like, I thought this was justice. You just, like, murdered 100 people. Like, what the fuck, dude?
You have a motivation. Good for you. And here's what really galls me about this, is that I mentioned that it was cut for runtime, obviously, but in the same episode, there's about 2 minutes of filler. So why didn't they just adapt the fucking flashback and not add the filler? Why the fuck would you do that? God!
I honestly... And I don't think it's anything, like, racial about it, because I just don't think that's a thing. They're like, oh, this character is probably not going to be important.
Here's the thing, like, it just I don't even know if it's even racial, but, like, they had to have known because of, like, of how the production works. It's not like they made that episode and then they read the material for when he betrays everyone and they're like, oh shit, we can't, it's already gone to air, we can't fix it. They had to have known about, like, the twist at the end that he's going to join Aizen and become, like, a major character going forward as a main antagonist. So, like, why would you do that? Why would you?
And here's the thing that really kind of grinds my ass, too, is that eventually those panels do get, you know, adapted, but it's, like, right before he dies, so it's, like, so ham-fisted. I'm like, at this point, I'm like, why do I give a shit? I'm like, you know, it's too late. It's too late to apologize.
It's too late. Well, yeah, well, that's the thing, like, as I recall, that's actually a separate flashback from this one. It's the one that takes place as he's dying later, but it's not the same. It's his, like, physical reaction to her dying and, like, freaking out the guards and all that. That's not the same as his inner monologue explaining his view of the world, which is really important to his character. And I would go so far as to say that, like, for side characters, this is the second most egregious adaptational choice the anime made. Second most. The most one is in the Wakamundo arc. So I will rant about it at length when we get there, but you probably already know what it is.
I have a feeling I know what it is, and I await the spice of that.
Just to clarify, like, I may have said it on the last podcast, but even though this was years and years and years ago, and people can change and staff can rotate out, choices like this are why I was and am hesitant to, you know, get hyped about the anime coming back, because I would like to see it animated. I would love to see the story get its proper due and get adjusted so that it's, you know, it's got the stuff that was cut out the first time, all of that. But Pierrot has fucked up the anime so many times that I can't just be like blindly, oh no, they won't pull the football away this time, you know? Just, yeah, that's what this and many other instances are why I'm just kind of like jaded and wary about getting my hopes up with this specific studio. I can trust a lot of other animation studios, not Pierre.
I mean, I'm not going to defend Pierre, but I feel like they have gotten better. I saw some of Black Clover and I found it enjoyable. Like, I definitely think in terms of like quality, we're kind of moving away from like, you know, shitty stuff like Tokyo Ghoul Re 2, whatever the fuck it's called, because I don't care. And more just, you know, straight up, all right, this is the adaptation. Like, they're really, outside of like Boruto, I don't think they're doing like any big weekly shows anymore.
Yeah. I'm sure this anime will look good. We'll see what the content looks like, is all I'm saying. But...
I mean, I still feel like in terms of like my favorite seasons of Bleach, I still think seasons 2 and 3 are my favorite. I think it has the best art style. It's kind of timeless in a way. It has like the sketching. There's the more detailed character models. It's not modern. It's not old. It's just, I feel like it's more timeless, where if you go to season 1, I'm like, oh, this anime clearly came out in 2004. Like you just, you know the tells. And then later in the series, you know, it's more streamlined.
Oh man, I'd like to see Bleach in 80s style.
Oh, that'd be cool shit. But you can see that, you know, it's definitely, the character models become less detailed. You start noticing animation errors more. So I think seasons 2 and 3 is arguably the peak of how great the show looks in the original series, but I really love the updated art styles for 1,000 Years Blood War, so we'll have to see.
And then Future and Shift, do you have any thoughts to close us off with?
Nothing. No, nothing closing really that hasn't already been said.
Yeah, same.
I guess our next episode will be like the first few episodes of the anime, and then like we'll just jump back to the beginning of the Iroquois arc.
Yeah, because the Iroquois arc, I think, might have to be one or two episodes, because there's a lot to break down. So much happens. And like, even like some of the fights, you could arguably make an episode just on that. Oh, speaking of episodes, I forgot to mention at the start of the episode, we're now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So you can still watch us on YouTube, but we'll be there too. So yay.
Yay.
That was a very enthusiastic yay.
Yay.
All right. So with that said, thanks for listening. Just follow us on Twitter at BleachWikia. Our YouTube channel is at BleachWiki. And you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as BleachWiki Podcast. I'm Lemurs.
I'm Zill.
I'm that guy who's still here.
I'm Francis.
All right. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye.
Farewell.
So long. Farewell. Avi, there's it. No, okay, no.